Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
This is the Best Hang Podcast featuring Max Kerman, Shane Cunningham, and I am Mike Bierman. Welcome to the Best Hang Podcast. I'm Mike, we got Max, we got Shane, and we are in three different locations, but we're getting together because we want to bring you, the listeners, some of that Best Hang content that you've come to know and hopefully love. How do we start, fellas? It's been a lot of movies over the holidays, a lot of hangs. We had a pub crawl. We talked about your birthday last episode. What else has been going on, gang?
The band is actually in the studio cooking up a little something fun that I can't probably talk about yet. So yeah. I got to go to the studio and do some vocals later today. But I went to the Raptors game last night, actually, which was very fun.
Denver.
We got our asses kicked, right? Like,
well, they made a run in the back end there. They got it to seven, I think, or something like that in the last 3 minutes. So there was a chance. You know, Scotty played great.
I was invited by some folks that have really good seats. And don't you hate it when you're watching the game from TV and you see those assholes in the platinums that aren't there, you know, at the top of the third quarter, maybe even in the fourth, because they're down in, you know, the lounge eating dinner, you know, those guys?
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. That was me yesterday. but anyway, we left the last episode on Leave the World Behind. And I've been dying to talk about this with you guys because I feel like we can make this a bit into a movie podcast. There's so many good movies this time of year, as we know. It's award season. And it just reminds me every time I go to the movies, like the experience is 1,000 times better. Like, I don't know if I can sit through a movie really by myself, like at home. And I'm always surprised when I hear Mike being like, yeah, I banged out a movie on the bus or like at lunchtime at Ginger while I was eating like my pho. I'm like, I just like watched three episodes or something. I'm like, how does he do it? But I love going to see movies that are going to be on Netflix in like 2 weeks, but seeing them in theaters first. So obviously did we talk about May December on the pod?
No, because yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
We talked about it for a bit, just how much you loved it. And then, went into like the history of it. Mike was actually, he started deep diving the teacher as talking about it, and you took offense to that. But movie since. And to your point, Max, I got so distracted at home watching that shit, I need to see movies in theaters now. Mm. However, the movie we're talking about right now, what's Leave the World Behind, it's so captivating.
Yeah.
In years, I hadn't felt like I've been immersed in a movie, like truly immersed, where I forgot I was watching a movie.
Set it up, Mike.
Well, okay. So my experience is, first of all, I listen, these movies where it's either the end of the world or the collapse of society or some sort of natural disaster, those movies, and there hasn't been really a great one in a long time. Like if you go back to like The Day After Tomorrow, what was that other one? 2012 with John Cusack. There was like a huge string of these types of movies where things are sort of coming to the end. Society's collapsing. You know, I haven't seen one in a very long time, and I haven't seen a movie that to me stands up in science fiction sort of way or a thriller way, story-wise, as much as it does with the sort of big set pieces or the exciting stuff like a building falling down or some grand sort of moment. So when this trailer came out, and it's Sam Esmail, who is the guy that did this show called Mr. Robot, which is like sort of a cool hip cyber hacking type thing with Rami Malek. It was like, it's him doing it. He also did a show called Homecoming with Julia Roberts, which was great. So when this trailer came out, Ethan Hawke, Julia Roberts, Mahershala Ali, Kevin Bacon in a smaller part, I was like so excited. I'm like, this trailer's a banger. I like the subject matter. I like the auteur that's doing it. I'm like, I can't wait. So on the pod, Max, when you said, I've seen this movie in the theaters, I was like, oh, don't say a word. I've intentionally not read anything about it. Long story long, comes out on Netflix. And now the thing about Netflix is it drops, it's coming out like on a Friday or whatever. And they come out on like, you'd think midnight, but it's actually 3 a.m. because on the West Coast, they hold it back. So it's midnight, you know, mm-hmm. West Coast time. So I put in Winona to bed and I woke up that did that thing where it was like, it's like, oh God, I fell asleep putting her to bed. And I woke up at 2 a.m. And I was like, shit, this is the night that Leave the World Behind comes out. I'm like, am I actually going to stay up and watch this? Like, cause I was so excited to watch it. And I was like, are you really? Are you not? And I was like, fuck it. I had a shower. I came down to the basement. I threw it on. And from basically like 3:30 until 5:30, I watched Leave the World Behind, which was the perfect way to consume it. Cause you know, you got that weird kind of mindset when it's that late at night and it's kind of like you're displaced in time. And for our listeners, this movie is essentially, you should just watch it without a description. And this was, that took me a good 20 minutes to get there on what's going to be a short pod.
Yeah.
But the movie is essentially, you are unaware of what's happening, but all of the sort of pillars of our technology collapse. Like basically we can't use our cell phones. The internet is down. There is no way of sort of communicating or connecting in the way that we do in the modern world. And then all of these other sort of, I guess we should say spoiler alerts. These extraordinary things start to happen, like ships become they are run aground. You know, they come out of the ocean and up into the beaches, and planes are flying in the sky, and all this stuff sort of happens sequentially and gradually builds and builds and builds. And you're just sort of immersed in this thing, and you're like, what is happening? What is the answer? And you're seeing it through the lens of Julia Roberts and Ethan Hawke, and their two kids are at an Airbnb outside of like New York City or whatever, like across, you know, somewhere.
Like the Hamptons, sort of like outside of the city. Yeah.
100%. In the middle of the night, Mahershala Ali and his daughter knock on the door and they say, hey, we were in the city at a thing, but all the power went out essentially. And so we decided to come here to our Airbnb. We own this place. There's a little bit of obviously like racist tension where like the Julia Roberts character is kind of like, we're not letting these people there. We want to stay. We'll stay in the basement. We don't really have anywhere else to go. And this is our place after all. He's like, they're like, we'll split your, you know, we'll cut the fee down in half for what you paid to stay here. She's kind of like, are they scamming us? What's going on? Anyway, there's a lot going on in the movie aside from just sort of like, it's a relationships movie, but it's also this sort of extraordinary and titillating sort of fall of society movie. And that would be my description, which again was a very long-winded one, but
no, I like the setup. It actually kind of reminded me of like a better version of Don't Look Up. It like taking on these like really big societal themes. Great and call. I really disliked Don't Look Up. I thought they tried to take on too much. And I think generally as like a rule of storytelling, and I think about this as it relates to songwriting, is if you're trying to take on like a really big issue in a story, it's actually best to go as small as possible. And in Don't Look Up, there's so many different characters and there's so many different setups. And it's like we're in the war room and then we're in someone's house. And then like, we're kind of jumping around from person to person to person to person to try to get like the breadth of what's happening. But it's actually more effective, I think, in storytelling, just to keep it like, let's talk about four people. Let's keep it as small as possible. And that will do all the heavy lifting. Yeah. And I think the other thing related to the Ethan Hawke mention, first of all, we all love Ethan Hawke. I love him so much. Ash loves him. I think I just get so much out of him as an actor and as a thinker. But he was so much funnier than anything in Don't Look Up that I can recall. Because I know Adam McKay directed Don't Look Up, and Adam McKay is known as a comedy guy. The one-liners coming from Ethan Hawke and his facial expressions in the moments were so genuinely funny. The archetype of Brooklyn dad who cannot use his hands and is just quoting stuff from The Atlantic and The New Yorker was so good and so me. I was like, this is exactly what I would do. I try to de-escalate things by talking about an article I read recently. And it's like while planes are falling out of the sky and like Teslas are like driving into one another, driverless Teslas are driving. You know what I mean? Like he was so good. And I really liked it that, you know, there's some turns that you were expecting the movie to make. You're like, okay, who's sort of the evil, who's the villain, who's the person who's out for no good? Whenever it actually had some humanity, like whenever you thought it was going to go like Mahershala's character, or are they devious? Kevin Bacon, okay, he's an angry guy. Julia Roberts, is she going to just reveal herself to be the ultimate Karen? And then by the end of the movie, it kind of settled into a sweeter place, and it kind of actually, despite it all, you kind of had some hope in humanity. You know, I thought, well, I don't know, the way it ended, by the way, last thing I'll say, it is so hard to end a fucking movie these days. I feel like there's so many great movies from this year that have had odd or less than great endings. And I love the final scene.
I think he worked backwards from the ending, and that, because it is a fantastic ending. And I think once you, as like a writer or filmmaker, I think once he had it in his brain, he's like, he knows that's an amazing hammer. And you work back from there and then sort of plant the seeds throughout with the young daughter character. You're going to say something, Shane?
Oh, just like what I thought they did really well was so often in the movie, they're setting up things where you as an audience member are guessing what's going to happen. And then they would use Ethan Hawke and Julia Roberts to kind of talk through every thought you've had as an audience member and acknowledge that we're thinking this too as filmmakers. We know what you're thinking as an audience. So we want to say it out loud to let you know that it's probably not what you're thinking. So then you're like, what the fuck could it be if it's not all those things they just laundry listed? Because Alex and I were having a real-time debate of whether Mahershala Ali was a good guy or a bad guy, and whether he was, you know, breaking into the liquor cabinet or if he really had the key. And they're literally Ethan Hawke and Julia Roberts characters going through all the reasons he could or can't be a thief. Anyway, I thought they did that really well. And sometimes to like a comedic extent, like when Mahershala Ali's telling the story about he has this friend in a very high up position and he might be part of like an evil cabal or something. And then you're kind of like eye rolling while you're watching this. You're like, that's the explanation. And then he's like, but of course, this would be far too simple of an explanation. And then that's kind of a big laughing point to just let the audience in on it. On everything. Like, I thought that was like probably the best case of like expositional dialogue that I'd ever seen. Like,
you know, another moment in the script that really stood out, because Barack Obama and Michelle Obama's company, they're one of the producers on it. And there's a line in it, and I wonder if it was in the book, because it's all based on a book, or if it was added later in the script, was I think Mahershala's character says, you know, like the most powerful people in the world, they can't even stop it. They just know a little bit ahead of time.
They get a heads up.
Yeah. They get heads up. And I was like, oh, did Obama write that or something? Because that's how it feels, right? It's like when it comes to big time shit, it's not like the president of the United States can actually do something if they're cyber hackers. You know, they're at the whim of everybody else.
Yeah, how he was explaining the scariest thing in the world isn't the fact that there is this evil cabal that can control everything. It's that there isn't, and that they don't know. Nobody knows when something catastrophic can happen. The best they can get is a heads up. And that's what's kind of truly terrifying. It's like the lack of control we all have.
I just, even the dialogue when Mahershala Ali is telling that story and he's like, you know, when I got a call from this guy and I made a joke like, oh, join it, because he wants to pull all his money out real quick when he was at, you know, that night before everything went down, his rich, the guy that was his client, Mahershala Ali's client. He's explaining that story where he's like, he called and he goes, yeah, I need all my money moved around, whatever. And Mahershala Ali goes, and I said, like, as a joke, I'm like, oh, you going to meet up with the cabal again or whatever, that evil cabal. And he's like, and this guy didn't laugh. He goes, and he laughs at everything, even bad jokes, you know, but he didn't laugh. He just said, take care of yourself. That was so like, that just painted such a strong picture of the relationship there. Mahershala Ali's character's like sort of insight into that guy's character, that guy truly being scared and not even doing the nicety that like maybe like charismatic rich people would have to laugh at any bullshit joke. It was just like, no, this is kind of we're going into a bad stretch of time, an unknowable stretch of time. The movie was so, to me, good and absorbing and sort of like, it's been a long time since I've been in a movie where, like you said, like you think you kind of know what's happening, but you don't. And then you're just like, I'm enjoying this ride and what's going to happen next. And you're letting it unfold. I did that thing with like 20 minutes left where I checked how much time was left. Cause I was like, I want this movie to keep going. I want like another 2 hours in this world. And I was like, oh, there's only like 20, 15 minutes left. I'm like, we're not going to get like resolution in a certain way. I'm like, but I don't mind. I'm like, I'm just here. And then obviously the way it resolved with the friends of it all. What did we think of weaving the friends in and out? And the fact that Julia Roberts had been on Friends and she had dated Matthew Perry,
yeah.
which was kind of a fun little meta bit. But I finished the movie at like 5:30 or 6 in the morning and I just start sending off texts. I'm like, leave the world. I'm just telling everybody, I want to spread the word. Like, Leave the World Behind is a fucking banger. I just want to be like, I want everyone to see it so I can talk about it with people. And what's crazy about this movie, I'll say, what's interesting is, and honestly, there's been some, you know, mixed opinion. Like obviously Maxie, you liked it. Shaney really liked it. But then I was out for drinks with like our buddies, Dawson and Felix at Odds actually. And they were kind of lukewarm. And I found that a couple of people have been really lukewarm on it. But I knew that the movie was sort of becoming a thing because me and Danica were going to watch May December based on your recommendation, Max. I was like, oh, let's watch May December somewhere. She's like, okay. So we didn't end up doing it. And then like a day later, she was like, and after I watched Leave Her Behind that morning at breakfast, I was telling her about it. I was like, I just watched this movie. I'm like, it was awesome. I sort of explained it because I knew it's not sort of movie she'd ever watch. But then a week later, she's like, hey, tonight, can we watch, that movie you were talking about? And I was like, yeah, sure. She's like, no, not the one about the teacher. She's like, the other one about the, I was like, but like the world ending? She's like, yeah. I was like, whoa. And she's like, yeah. She's like, I got messages from like 3 different people saying it was awesome that they've watched it. And I was like, wow. I'm like, I guess the movie's out there in the world doing its work.
Well, I would say though as well, just generally as a rule, I don't trust anybody's opinion about anything these days if they said they didn't like it. Because if they said they didn't like it, or if it was a if you actively dislike something, I will believe you. But if you go, yeah, it didn't really do much for me, I go, were you paying attention? I just don't trust that anybody's paying attention. Like if you watch something at home and you go, yeah, I'm sort of lukewarm on it, then I'm like, I don't trust you. You have kids, you're looking at your phone, you weren't immersed in it. Do you know what I mean? If you saw it in the theater and you said, yeah, it didn't really do much for me, then I would believe you. But I just wouldn't trust anybody. Any dad at home, I just wouldn't trust.
Dad. That's the same for parody. But if anyone says that movie was too vague, that's where I don't respect the opinion. That's why when Mike was saying that Sean and Felix were saying the ending was a little vague on what happened. To me, it's like Mahershala Ali pretty much put it on a platter. What is likely going on. And Kevin Bacon's character gave clues to suggest that what Mahershala Ali is saying is going on is probably the case. So
what's going on again? I forget.
That like to save money on like military. We don't want to spoil the whole ending.
No. So for listeners, basically Mahershala Ali has sort of a dialogue, a scene sort of right near the end before the sort of big ending. And he basically sort of gives his theory on what he thinks is happening, but it's as plausible as anything. And you kind of buy it. And then there's enough clues along the way, like Shane says.
Like Kevin Bacon kind of says it to be almost true. He almost confirms the theory. Right?
Totally. But I think for a lot of people that watch an action movie or like a movie like this, a thriller, that they want concrete resolution. Like if you're somebody that's into like a Tom Cruise movie, like, so if you're sitting at home, if you're just just some couple, you're 28, you're like, let's throw on a movie. And they like popcorn movies. It's like they're going to watch Mission Impossible. They're going to get told a story. They're going to get a beginning, a middle, and an end in a conventional way of resolution. They'll be told, this is who caused the cyber outage. This is who's attacking us. This is what's going to happen sort of going forward. And this is the resolution of what the characters we just spent 2 hours with. This is how it ends for them, whether it's happy or sad. We get answers. We get definitive answers. This movie doesn't do that. It gives you enough. And I think what makes it clever and what makes it sort of unique and cool is it's not John Cusack and his love and Amanda Peet, I think, is in that movie, and their kid at the end of 2012 on the sort of safe ship sailing away. Like that doesn't happen in this. This isn't that kind of movie. But I think for some people, and if you look at Twitter, that they find that frustrating. They're like, wait, I didn't get resolution on this, this, or this. And you know, different preference.
Well, okay,
if it was like a Sofia Coppola ending where it's just some artistic thing where the credits roll and it seems like that's like a scene feels like it's missing. This was as close to being as a definitive ending without it actually spoon feeding it to you. So if anyone's saying it's vague, that feels like such an odd criticism. Like,
I have one criticism actually of the movie. And do you guys have any criticisms? Because I have one.
A good one, but you go first.
You could say this is small potatoes, and it kind of is small potatoes. But it just feels like such a missed opportunity because I love the way it's filmed. I love the cinematography. They do all these like tricky shots where it starts, the camera starts on its side and then, turns and is corrected. And I love the sound of the score. I love the mood. I love everything. I thought the opening credits were so goofy because when it opens, it's like this feel good hip hop song with like some just like kind of like clever graphics. I'm like, I was like, oh, it's this kind of movie. Those kind of movies, like when it's like feel good time, it was like, is this the opening of like a J-Lo movie going into the city to work a nightclub or some shit? Like that's kind of how it felt to me.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the movie was the perfect tone. I was like, why the fuck are we opening the movie like this? Because it made me take the movie way less seriously off the top. And I was like, why? Everything about it is so artful and so on point. Except for, and by the way, like this, the song itself was a totally fine song. It just like did not match the tone of the rest of the movie at all. No offense to J-Lo going into the city, working in a nightclub. That kind of movie can be great too. But
what was that movie called? There was a movie where she was a stripper. It was like kind of a big movie. She thought she was going to nominate for an Oscar for it. Hustlers.
It felt like Hustlers. This comedy that came out recently with Julia Louis Dreyfus. It felt like it would be the opening song for that film.
Yeah, or the what's the Jonah Hill movie? You People, like that thing.
That's
right.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Oh well. Yeah. Oh yeah. Same one. Yeah.
I think. Yeah. And honestly, I mean, it's 100% notable because I did take note. But with stuff like that, sometimes it's like obviously it's a stylistic choice. He is so meticulous in his choices. He didn't do it randomly. He probably did it to throw us off or to get off kilter, the way that the world can lull you into a certain sense of like feeling a certain way and then shift on you suddenly. Like he's obviously messing with moods. Whatever his choice, I don't know why he did it, but I guarantee it was intentional.
Well, the camera movement was getting me dizzy. So early I'm like, I've got a theory that the world is subtly off its axis and gravity is shifting. That's what the plate. And then when I saw the satellite shut off at the one point, I'm like, I'm right. Oh my God. Like the satellites are going out of order, which of course, I wasn't even close to being right, but I thought the filmmaking was leading us towards that, gravity's getting off in some sort of just enough to fuck up the world.
Okay. Here's a question. Ash has sent me the Rotten Tomato score. Have you guys seen it? I want you to have a guess.
I saw it like a week ago, 2 weeks ago. What's it at now?
So the tomato score, the tomato meter, which is certified reviews, 75%. Which is perfect. Like, okay,
that's perfect.
Audience score. What do you think, Shane?
Ooh, okay. It's either 40 or 90. I'll say 40.
34. I'm shocked.
Yeah.
Like, what is there not to like about this movie?
It's the ending. People want resolution. People want resolution. And this movie does not provide it.
What I think is people are misinterpreting this movie as a political movie somehow. And it's making some comment and it's got into some troll Reddit forum who they've released the hounds to some extent. Because there's no enough people who actually watch the movie would give it a 34. People probably think it's commenting on Trump in some way or the opposite. And someone has to send on that.
That's a good theory too. Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, yeah. let's move along to Poor Things, because this is another movie which I just saw in theaters 2 days ago.
So crazy.
It's quite fresh. Crazy. I think we all just saw it in theaters, right?
We did, yeah.
Okay. And go ahead.
Did you guys, I saw this movie alone in the middle of the day, and I felt like the biggest pervert in the world watching it. I felt like I was going to be arrested. I was looking almost like the feeling you get if you watch a sex scene with your parents. It was bordering on uncomfortable. Did you guys feel that in any way, or is that just...
I think it's just you, Shane, because so the movie stars Emma Stone. You set up the movie, Mike, because you're good at that.
Yeah,
and then I'll answer your question, Shane.
This is like a big sort of art house, interesting like film festival type movie vibe, and essentially stars Emma Stone, a bit like a Frankenstein type character, mm-hmm. where this sort of mad genius doctor, played by Willem Dafoe, it sort of creates this character. I won't give away too much, but essentially he finds a way to sort of like take a body and sort of put a brain in it. And he's essentially like, you're like, what is the deal with her sort of off the top? And you kind of realize she's learning in real time. And it's because she's sort of been reanimated and he's sort of created this person. And basically you follow the Emma Stone character's journey from essentially being an infant, you know what I mean? Even though she's in a full grown woman's body, to sort of becoming self-aware and learning at this super rapid pace and becoming super sentient and smart. And you follow her odyssey over 2 hours in her life, I don't know how many years of her life, 4 years of her life or whatever. And then we get sort of resolution. But that's the sort of story, her going out into the world, her starting in this sort of mad lab, this scientist creating her, and then her encountering the world through the eyes of basically like an innocent or somebody. That's the movie's trick. It's essentially a mirror back on ourselves, but through the eyes of like, if you didn't come from the constructs of society, of politeness, of all of these weird traditions we have, and you just sort of were like taking it in like a child, essentially, but in an adult sort of frame, what would it look like? How would it be? What is the nature of man seen through her eyes? So that's sort of the thing, what Shane is referring to and what I did not know. So I had messaged. So I went and saw it on like Monday. So this week, like at work, that sort of couple days leading up to Christmas, couple days after Christmas, there's no one in the office. This is like famously sort of like a get inspired, go watch a movie at a matinee. Back before anyone had kids, you'd hit the bar at around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Like it was a fun time. So this is a real movie time. So Matt Unsworth's in town. Nobody else was really around. I was like, I'm going to go see a Nooner. So I text Unzi and I'm like, hey, you want to go see Poor Things? He writes back. He's like, I don't think I could see it again. He's like, but I was shocked at how naked Emma Stone was throughout. She really goes for it. So right there, I'm like, okay, now I'm expecting a not very good movie.
Out of smoke, you're just gone.
Gotta go. I'm expecting a not very good movie, which is good because expectations are everything. Because if I expected something amazing, I probably would have been disappointed. But I expected, okay, something mediocre. And I was like, now I'm kind of curious about how much sort of graphic nudity or whatever this is going to be. And so I would kind of, in some ways, I wish I hadn't texted him because I would have liked to have just taken it in completely without sort of warning. But how did you guys sort of like experience the movie?
Okay. So the reason which the way you just explained how it's like essentially a child's brain put into this attractive woman's body added to my feeling like a criminal while watching it, because it's essentially a four-year-old is fucking all these people. And Emma Stone also, although she's very beautiful and everything, I have her in the category in my mind of someone I should not see naked, maybe like the male
equivalent. Dignity.
It might be like Michael Cera. Like, I feel like I should never see Michael Cera nude with an erection.
Emma Stone, you have to add the erection. Okay, anyway.
Well, because that's a sexual act. Michael Cera nude in a shower, I might see, but Emma Stone, like, fucking, I'm just not ready to see that as a person with a four-year-old brain added in. I'm like, is this pedophilia at this point? Like, how did they get away with this trick? Obviously, you couldn't do it in reverse with like a 30-something and a four-year-old body doing this, but why is mine? I'm just thinking all these questions while watching it, and it felt like I was going to get dragged out of the theater. But what were you feeling watching this movie?
Well, first of all, it was unclear in her brain development how old she is when she discovers orgasms. So she's like, okay, so maybe she's six, maybe she's 11. Like in her brain, obviously she's like in, but yeah, you're right. It is odd. But because it was set up that way, and because she's such an odd character to begin with, despite the fact she is like literally naked, like 3/4 of the movie and having sex for like half of the movie and like full everything. And she at one point is a prostitute in a Paris brothel. Like, despite all these things that like typically, you know, if there's a beautiful Hollywood starlet who's naked having sex, like despite that normally being a thing that every guy would go, oh, this is going to be a fun movie. It didn't feel sexual at all to me. Like I was just like, it was so normal. Like I was not turned on or anything. I was just like, this is actually just a really interesting character development. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong. I love a celebrity nude scene just as much as anybody does.
Truly. That's the name of this episode.
Yeah. No, but this one, I was just like, it felt like I was, imagine like being a doctor and having to look at somebody's naked body. But
it felt very, it all felt very,
business or,
it all felt very clinical to your point.
It all felt so clinical. And okay, for me, I can't recall an experience of going to a movie where I actively hated the movie for the first hour so much to the degree that I was like, fuck it, I'm taking a nap. I looked over, Ash and Book Club Maddie are also napping. I'm like, this movie sucks. It's all this Tim Burton shit where it's like, oh, there's a pig with the head of a chicken.
Yeah.
And
felt like their handsy. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also it's like, why is he blowing these weird bubbles out of his mouth? Like at the dinner table, I'm like, I fucking hate this. Is this really what we have signed? And it's black and white. I'm like, fuck this movie. What a fucking waste of time. And I was literally thinking, who is paying for this shit? Who is giving the green light on whatever astronomical budget? Cause it's an expensive looking movie. Who is responsible for this? I was actually even thinking about you, Mike, where I was like, oh, well, okay. I know not every movie's for me. Mike likes a bunch of shit that I don't care about at all, like Star Trek or whatever. And I'm like, well, maybe but I was like, I don't even think this kind of movie. And like, I guess Tim Burton's sort of popular, but I'm like, who is the audience for this movie? And then at around the hour mark, I don't know, 75 minutes, it's a long movie, by the way, it turns to color and she starts to develop and she's going on this journey and she gets out of the old creepy house and she's, you know, in Portugal and then she's in Greece and then she's in Paris and the set pieces are amazing. And she turns into the most grounded, self-aware person with her own sense of determination, self-determination. And she's actually she becomes in charge. And she actually, like, there's something super like feminist about the movie, I want to say, and maybe,
of course,
you know, about her, like understanding her own sexuality, what's important to her. It was like a really amazing coming of age movie. And by the end of the movie, I'm like, do I fucking love this movie? Do I think this movie is amazing? And I just can't recall a movie where I fucking hated it so much. To me, I'm like, yeah, solid 8 out of 10, maybe even more the way I think about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the other thing, which is amazing, is that Ash sent the Netflix reviews. What do you think they are? Because by the way, I think this movie, by the way, is so much more challenging.
Yes.
Than Leave the World Behind. Like as a viewer, like I like. If you were sort of unhappy with Leave the World Behind and you thought it was a little too, what's going on here? In my mind, poor things is way more challenging. What do you think the reviews are and what do you think the audience score is, Shane?
I think this is critic bait. So this would be in the 90s for critics. Audience, it has a lot of nudity. So I figure that can trick the dummies into liking it. So I think it's a troll group liking it in the audience thing. So I would say 90 something critics, 70 audience.
Mike?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll go with that. That's what I would have guessed.
Okay. 93 critics. You're right, Shane. Are you ready for audience score?
Yeah.
95. Wow. 95.
Okay.
Well, okay.
Sure, the perverts have descended on this movie.
The pervert.
Also, here's the other thing: the amount of like people that would actually like the movie's only in theaters. Like Leave the World Behind has such a larger voting base of audience score. There's probably only like 500 people who have actually voted on Poor Things who have actually gone to a theater. My theater was dead empty. I had like three other people in that theater.
Good point. You're right. The people are who are seeking this out to watch it are
lovers. Smart.
This guy did The Lobster, The Favorite, all these like critical darling films. So it's a very, you know, Toronto, New York audience seeing this.
Should I see The Lobster or The Favorite? Haven't seen either.
Favorite's great. Yeah. See everything this guy's done. He's one of the most exciting new directors. And I love the fact he's only 50, which I'm not joking. Like 50 is not old in directing world. So I'm happy we might get like four or five more movies out of this guy.
That's so cool. What an ambitious movie though. It's yes. Oh my God. Like there's some movies, like, by the way, this shows my like supreme confidence in myself. There's some movies that I can imagine doing, like Leave the World Behind. You know, I could probably do that one pretty easily.
you got to pick something more basic than that.
No, but there's some movies I'm like, yeah, I can construct that, no problem. And there's other movies that I go, where is this guy's mind? Like, how did you possibly imagine it? And that's Poor Things is in that category. I'm like, it's just like so superhuman or something. I don't know. but okay, speaking of Emma Stone, speaking of turnarounds, I had little interest in Emma Stone. I've always sort of been annoyed with her as an actress. She always was a bit much. And also I didn't even really like her face. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you know, she's like, your face annoys me. You're a try-hard actor and I don't like your roles and your face annoys me. And so I didn't think I was much of an Emma Stone fan, but I'm only telling you this now because after Poor Things and watching The Curse, I go to Ash. I'm like, is Emma Stone the actress of our generation? Is she the best actress like in the world right now? And I'm just so impressed by her. And the role that she has in The Curse is like, she's so fucking good in it. And I was like, this person is acting her ass off. Mm-hmm. And the so two roles. It wasn't
gratuitous nudity that
you are. No. I was having the feeling in The Curse because in The Curse.
You know,
because
Max, I got to say.
No. I had in The Curse before.
The way that you described The Poor Things is you were saying it was the worst movie you ever saw. And the minute it became color, which is right when she had sex for the first time, is when the movie turned around for you.
Well, she's great in those scenes too, but it has nothing to do with that. It was the self-determination by the end of the
2021 was The Voyager.
That's a joke though. That's a joke in a group text that we don't put on the pod, boys.
Speaking of The Curse, we'll get back to Emma Stone and whether she's the actress of our generation and if she's pulled off things like I think of Anne Hathaway watching Emma Stone's Ascension and just going,
oh my God.
God damn it, that was supposed to be me. But back to The Curse.
Did you send, by the way, that tweet of that? It's like Emma Stone never is like an unschooled actress and she never went to Juilliard, but like every Juilliard actor would die to have that fucking role and she's out there killing it.
There was some tweet that was like Emma Stone, who's like untrained or minimally trained, is employing every technique that every Juilliard actor would love in that movie Poor Things and killing it. But I watched episode one of The Curse last night, fellas, because I knew we were talking today. Mm. And I got to say, for the first 5 minutes, I was like, oh, what are we doing here? But even by the end of the first one, though, I was in the filmmaking, the discomfort and all that. But I completely forgotten about the penis talk from our pod two pods ago or whatever, where you said that Nathan's little dink is in there.
Yeah.
And then the dad shows his dink in the mushroom area. Oh, no, the tomatoes. Yeah. He's growing tomatoes. Of course, I thought mushroom. That caught me off guard and it made me laugh so hard. When they just, because it's a smash cut to a close up of him being Nathan Fielder, and then it's a slow sort of the camera comes up to the face. But I liked episode one. But so please don't spoil more if we're going to talk about The Curse. Maybe we can do a curse episode as time goes on. But I did enjoy episode one. You guys are what, episode six, five, six, or something?
Yeah, whatever the most recent one is.
Maybe two or three, maybe three. But I'm rewatching it.
So yeah.
Attention.
Does it hold up? Is it like, is it still great? Like, I don't
know. Yeah, only gets better. It only gets better. And I will say, you know, we all love Nathan Fielder. I couldn't really get through the rehearsal. I thought that was just like too weird, too awkward, too exploitative for my taste. And this show, he really finds a groove because like, I'm like, oh, he's actually a good actor. And it's the perfect move, perfect show for him, perfect vehicle for him. And the way he plays off Emma Stone is really good. And of course, like all the Safdie tricks with the soundtrack, especially, and the kind of filmmaking, when they choose to kind of like shoot through a window or odd angles at times, it's a perfect mix between that with just like kind of classic good looking shots. It doesn't come off like cheap documentary. It actually comes off like cinematic. You know, like there's a shaky cam stuff that happens in like indie cinema. They don't fuck with that really at all. They find a different way to do it.
And another thing that a big Safdie Brothers trick is hiring regular people and having them mingle with trained actors. And that combination really gives like a weird authenticity to dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, Benny Safdie was on the Talk Easy podcast with Sam Fragosa. Did we all listen to that?
Yes.
Yeah,
I did not.
And so, you know, if you don't know anything about the Safdie brothers, you know, they did Uncut Gems and they did another movie called Good Time, is that what's called, with Robert Pattinson. And they're, you know, around our age and you know, from New York City, they like basketball. So it feels like we're kindred spirits in some ways. One thing he said, which I really liked, which was just such a good lesson for me, especially for anybody who's doing creative things, is on set, he plays the role of the sound guy when they're filming. So if somebody else is even directing the scene and he wants to be closer to the action, he'll be like, I'll do the sound. I'll just hold up the microphone so I can know what's going on. I have a better feel for what's happening in the scene than if I'm on monitor world, you know, 20 yards away. And
I think you might have shared this anecdote on the last pod.
Did I? Oh, sorry.
You did.
But I hate that bit of advice actually from him.
Oh, really? Like, why?
Because if you're a filmmaker, who gives a shit about the micro facial expressions you're watching when you're so close because you're the sound guy? Because he really wanted to get so close to the action he could see what's going on. All that matters is what's on the screen. Look what you're actually seeing in frame. Nothing's worse than some asshole coming in and talking to a director. It's like, oh, no, that's not even actually happening. That's not in the shot. We're actually shooting the back of her head. It's like, pay attention to what's on the monitor. Be close enough maybe where you can go up and just talk so you're not in a video village 8 miles away so you can't even talk to them, or you're talking through a walkie-talkie to them. But have a monitor and see what's going on. That's the way to act.
I don't disagree with that. And I get that, like, that is the perspective of the audience. But I will say, just like, there is something about bucking convention that I think is interesting. And whatever kind of gets you closer to the creative and allows conversations to happen more easily, yeah, I think is useful. And sometimes there's like physical things. Like, for instance, like I'm going in the studio today. And this is a trick I learned a long time ago, but instead of setting me up in a sound booth to record my vocals, mm-hmm, I'm just going to sit next to the engineer at the board table and I'm just going to sing into the microphone and we're going to be next to each other. And it's just easier and more natural to have a conversation than like through three rooms that separate us where I'm in a vocal booth. So I'm just interested in like, how do you shake up your normal work routine? And maybe we can end on this, and I want to get your opinion on it. Bradley Cooper, I think there's a tweet in our text group. He says he doesn't like chairs on set because as soon as you sit down, you lose the energy of like, you know, of what a set should feel like. And I was like, I totally agree. I think there's sitting down is such a fucking killer. And I think there is like a frenetic energy when you're moving about. Do you guys agree? Do you guys like that?
1000%. Yeah. If I'm doing a phone call, I'm never sitting down. I'm walking. I'm pacing. My brain works. If I'm directing, I'm never sitting in that fucking seat. I only sit if I feel like I'm walking too much and I'm making people uncomfortable with my energy. But what do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I think run a set however you like. I mean, sometimes like with commercials, you know, we have a lot of clients that need to like, they want to watch the monitor for whatever reason. If you're doing, you know, you're making a commercial for a product or whatever. And it made me laugh the thought of telling them like to keep the energy on set and to keep the creative going. It's like, you can't sit down. You know, you got some like 60-year-old woman that like works for, you know, some butter company and she's like, oh, okay. But I feel like, 100%, like energy is everything. And I think like vibes and the way you run a set really does affect the way that the collective can work and create. And I think that's why, like, it's like anything. It's like if your direct manager at whatever office job you do has bad vibes, well, no one wants to fucking go to work. You know what I mean? And if you're a tyrant, or, you know, I don't think Bradley Cooper saying we don't have chairs on my sets is insane. I think that's an interesting creative sort of like choice that changes the sort of mood of the set. And I think it's like, you know, when you're the boss, you get to run things however you like. And hopefully, especially for making something creative or anything, really, you get like-minded people, you know? So if it's people that are into that kind of energy, that's great. If you get a bunch of sort of like crew guys or teamsters or other creatives, above the line people that are like, this is fucking pretentious. What are we doing here? Blah, blah, blah. There's probably not people that are going to help get the ship where it needs to get and get your vision to where it needs to go. So I think it's a good way of also sussing out sort of certain vibes that maybe you don't want as a part of the team anyway.
I say give people chairs who want to sit. And if you don't want to sit, don't sit. But, you know, everyone needs to be treated differently. But I started that film yesterday, Maestro, excitedly, because I actually thought it was going to be really good.
And?
Bordering on unbearable in a way. So he does this thing where he's trying to
Don't say anything more.
No. I think we can all agree though that maybe if they maybe had some chairs on set, it could have maybe gone a little bit.
No, Max, I'm not going to say anything about the plot or anything.
Okay.
No, I'm just going to say one point. Can I?
Yeah.
About it. It's literally not about the plot. It's literally
about. Off. Go ahead.
Okay. So they do a thing that I do not like when in direction, which is to add realism. They have too many people talking over each other. So the whole movie, people talk over each other to a point that it feels artificial because you can see what they're trying to do to create realism. It's this synthetic, natural conversational style, which does not work at all. And it's going to drive you insane, Max.
You know, what's interesting about that, too, is it's like some people might not even notice. But now that you've mentioned it, it's all they're going to see. So it's good that Max took his headphones off.
I cannot notice it sometimes. Like movies do it. And, you know, some you don't notice it. Woody Allen movies. He does it every single line of dialogue. Every single line is taught. You cannot not notice it. I'm telling you, it's impossible.
Yeah.
But yeah, Max, okay. I just talked about literally nothing. Yeah,
I turned down the volume.
Yeah, you're back. All right, Max is back.
So irritating because I told you it was not about.
No, anything. You started talking about some camera techniques, and that's funny for me.
It wasn't about anything to do with anything. It was just in movies in general. I hate when dialogue overlaps. That's it,
guys. Last question.
Hit us.
You know, unrelated to this, but sort of reminded me of walking around, and you know, it's the holidays. We're home. We're thinking of our community. And I was reading this article about Windsor, Ontario, and how there's not enough people downtown. And there's like, we just need more density, much more action downtown. And obviously, think about Hamilton, about like, you just want more people around. Okay. You know, everyone likes it, like a street fair. You know, everybody's just like, yes, we like to go to a street fair. The streets are closed and you just, you don't have to buy anything. You just are just walking around. Like, I'd say most of the time I've ever been to a street fair, I haven't bought one thing. I just like walking around. And I think people like to see their neighbors. I think it's just like a nice thing to like and see faces and people watching. That's one of the great things about, especially if you're like in downtown Toronto, just like there's so many people just like to look at. What if the city of Hamilton was like, hey, every Wednesday, we're just gonna have something called Walk Your Block from 5 to 8 on Wednesday evenings. Just walk around. Nowhere, you don't have to buy anything, you don't have to do anything. We're not closing into the streets, it's costing everybody $0. But we just want you to leave your fucking house, go for a walk with a friend or your partner or your kids, and just walk and just see how that feels. Do you think people would say, fuck you, you fucking asshole? Or do you think they'd think it's a nice idea? Because I think that might be the start of the idea that, like, you know, walking around is kind of a nice thing.
You say one day a week?
Yeah, 5 to 8. Just start there. Just say, hey, Wednesdays is the Hamilton Walk Your Block Day. Just see how that feels. And that might encourage people to do it a little bit more often. Free idea.
I like it. I like that idea. Honestly, like if somehow Walk Your Block, like I think about my neighborhood and if there was like a Wednesday, people aren't going to do it every week. They're just not. They're not. People get busy. Like I can't even do shit I want to do every week. Like, so that is difficult. Here in Hamilton, we have a thing called Art Crawl. We have a thing called Super Crawl. We have the Barton Street Festival. So they have sort of like, but to your point, there's vendors. There's all, it's a bit of a to-do. They shut down streets. So I like the idea of like this sort of non-heavy lift, just being around other people saying, oh, hey, so-and-so, hey, you know, but will I actually at 6 o'clock on Wednesday night, every Wednesday, make a point of doing it? I don't know. What do you think, Shane?
Yeah, it's like a lot of things. It's kind of like this, the scarcity creates crowds and interest. So Art Crawl works because it happens once a month. Super Crawl works because it happens maybe twice a year. I don't know, maybe once a year. It'll just become a thing that no one does, especially Canada's tough for walking, if that's the thing, because it's so fucking cold between January and March.
Yeah, but if it was from April to November,
Yeah, I don't mind the idea, but something like, weren't you trying to solve the Windsor's problem?
Well, I mean, it's just related to a lot of like cities that feel kind of empty sometimes.
Windsor's problem is it has nothing going on. So create something. And Hamilton actually has shit where you can go to like see an interesting thing. Like maybe, what if Arkells do a show every Wednesday in Windsor? It's called Rock the Block. People come out.
That could be a- I'm trying to suggest free ideas. That's a very expensive idea.
Obviously they can't afford it, but
no, of course not.
Okay. No, I like the idea though. I'm a walker myself, so anything about walking is like, to me, it's the best exercise you can do.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't even talk about our fucking pub crawl. Listen, there's too much going on. Speaking of walking.
Okay, let's go. Let's do another one soon because I got to go to the studio. Yeah.
Okay, so remind Steph Tolev. Shane's wearing the shirt. She's a comedian, Canadian comedian. And we'll talk about the pub crawl if you remember anything.
And I also have to do a tribute to my good friend, Bert.
Yes.
Okay, we'll save that for next episode.
Okay, yeah.
All right, next episode, guys. You got something to look forward to. Thank you so much for listening. Obviously, as always, thank you to Nathan Nash. Thank you to Manager Ash. And hopefully we get you another one real soon with all those things we just mentioned. Guys, great hang. Maybe the best.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.